Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
There was a major explosion in the dock area where they load the boats up with drugs. They load the boats up with drugs, so we hit all the boats.
U.S. officials claim the CIA carried out a drone strike on a Venezuelan port. We'll go to Caracas for an update. Then Israel banned dozens of humanitarian groups from operating in Gaza beginning January 1st, including Doctors Without Borders and the Norwegian Refugee Council.
If we're no longer on the ground, present with our teams, able to support, the people who are going to suffer the most are the civilians who are the most in need.
And at midnight New York time, Democratic Socialist Soran Mamdani will be sworn into office as New York City mayor. And then again on New Year's Day by Senator Bernie Sanders with a block party outside City Hall. Mamdani calls it the inauguration of a new era.
My sincere hope is that New Yorkers who have long felt on the margins of this city, the homeless veteran straining to survive, the patient searching for the care that they need, an immigrant trying to get by, will feel that they now have leaders in their corner who understand their struggles and care to fight for them. That is the city I want to build.
We'll speak to New York City DSA co-chair Grace Mauser about building municipal socialism in New York. And we'll go to Norman Solomon, director of Roots Action, about his new book, The Blue Road to Trump Hell, How Corporate Democrats Pave the Way for Autocracy. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's banning more than two dozen international humanitarian groups, including Doctors Without Borders, MSF, Oxfam, and the Norwegian Refugee Council, from operating in the Gaza Strip starting New Year's Day. Israeli authorities say the organizations did not meet new registration requirements that include sharing detailed information about staff, funding, and operations. We'll speak with the Norwegian Refugee Council after headlines. Israel continues to claim without evidence that Hamas is infiltrating the distribution of aid, a charge the aid groups have repeatedly denied. The announcement drastically harms Gaza's residents, who rely heavily on the aid groups for medical care, food, and shelter. For instance, MSF is responsible for 20% of the hospital beds and supports a third of all births in Gaza. In a statement issued last week in anticipation of Israel's announcement, MSF said, quote, "If Israeli authorities revoke MSF's access to Gaza in 2026, a large portion of people in Gaza will lose access to critical medical care, water, and life-saving support. MSF's activities serve nearly 500,000 people in Gaza through our vital support to the destroyed health system," they said. Meanwhile, the Pentagon awarded Boeing an $8.6 billion contract to build and deliver 25 new F-15 fighter jets for the Israeli Air Force. The announcement comes after President Trump met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago, the U.S.'s largest supplier of arms to Israel. Saudi Arabia carried out strikes on Yemen's port city of Mukalla Tuesday after accusing the United Arab Emirates of sending a shipment of weapons and combat vehicles to separatist forces known as the Southern Transitional Council. Shortly after the strikes, the UAE announced it's withdrawing its remaining troops in Yemen. The Southern Transitional Council initially supported Yemen's internationally recognized government against the Houthi rebels, but earlier this month, the separatist forces launched an offensive against the Saudi Arabia-backed government troops. Russia launched an overnight drone attack on the Ukrainian port city of Odessa, injuring 4 people, including 3 children. The strike comes as Russia claims to have moved a nuclear-capable missile system into Belarus a day after Russia accused Ukraine of carrying out a drone attack on Russian President Vladimir Putin's residence. Russian officials doubled down on the claim on Tuesday, but refused to provide any evidence. Meanwhile, national security advisors from several European countries are set to meet in Ukraine on Saturday, according to the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Speaking to reporters, Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk said a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine could be reached within weeks.
The key outcome of recent days is the American declaration, and this is, of course, something new. Some were even surprised. The American declaration of the United States' readiness to participate in security guarantees for Ukraine after the conclusion of peace, including the presence of American troops, for example, on the border or on the line of contact between Ukraine and Russia.
In Iran, mass protests over the country's dire economic situation, including a collapsing currency and high inflation, have spread from businesses to universities. According to social media posts, students protested Tuesday at 6 university campuses in the capital, Tehran, and as well in Isfahan and Yazd. The post showed students chanting freedom and don't be afraid, we are all together. Clashes broke out between students and security forces near the University of Tehran. This comes as Iran responded to President Trump's threats that he would support new strikes against the country over its nuclear program. On social media, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian warned that any actions against Iran would be, quote, severe and regret-inducing, unquote. This is the head of Iran's parliament Tuesday.
I emphasize that Iran does not seek permission from anyone to defend itself. The Iranian people's response to any widespread adventurism and evil is unapologetic and even unexpected.
At least 2 oil tankers have reportedly arrived in Venezuela in recent days, with other vessels navigating toward the Venezuelan coast despite the Trump administration's blockade. The 2 other tankers approaching Venezuela are not under sanctions and are part of a fleet from China. It's unclear whether China will press the Trump administration to secure the safe passage of the vessels as the U.S. ramps up its military forces against Venezuela. This comes as the New York Times investigations offered a glimpse into the physical evidence following mounting U.S. military strikes on boats off the Caribbean. The Times reports days after a U.S. boat strike in November, a scorched 30-foot-long boat washed ashore a Colombian peninsula, followed by 2 bodies and dozens of packets, some of which had traces of a substance that smelled and looked like marijuana. The damning new details contradict President Trump's claims of targeting cocaine and fentanyl traffickers. Marijuana is legal in at least 40 U.S. states. The U.S. Treasury sanctioned 10 people and firms from Iran and Venezuela over allegedly supporting Iran's drone trade and ballistics program. It follows President Trump's announcement of a maximum pressure campaign against Iran over its nuclear program earlier this year, which led to U.S. strikes against 3 nuclear enrichment facilities in Iran over the summer. Iran continued its claim its nuclear program is peaceful and for civilian purposes. In Bolivia, protests led by miners have entered a second week, with police forces on Tuesday firing tear gas at demonstrators in the capital, La Paz. Protesters have condemned new austerity measures issued by the government of President Rodrigo Paz Pereira, who took office in early November. The decree has doubled gasoline prices and tripled diesel costs, with labor leaders and workers saying the new reforms will also skyrocket food and transportation costs for communities living in poverty. This is one of the protesters.
We've been repressed with rubber bullets, with weapons. We are fighting for a just cause. It is for Bolivia. We will fight to the end until we get this cursed decree repealed.
Honduran presidential runner-up Salvador Nasrallah has formally filed an appeal to challenge the results of last month's contested Honduran election. There are mounting accusations of fraud after the conservative Nasri Espota was declared the winner nearly a month after voters took to the polls, an electoral process that was riddled with technical issues and a lack of transparency. Espota was personally endorsed by President Trump, which was widely criticized as a way to intervene in Honduras's election. Nasrallah lost to Espota by less than 1% of the vote and is seeking a review and recount of voter ballots. The state of Florida executed 19 people on death row this year, a record high that nearly doubled the national average. That's according to the Death Penalty Information Center, which said Florida's executions accounted for about 40% of the country's total this year. Advocates calling to abolish the death penalty have warned many of those put to death suffered from mental illness or were not given access to proper legal representation. Others were victims of abuse. Florida's Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has been accused of expediting executions for political gain. Unlike other states where the courts are more steadily involved in the process, Florida's governor has the sole authority to issue execution warrants. A newly unsealed order in the criminal case against Kilmer Abrego Garcia revealed Justice Department officials pushed for his indictment, calling it a top priority after he was wrongfully sent to El Salvador's mega prison, SECOT, then returned to the U.S. under court order. Meanwhile, ICE says it will not rearrest him again as long as a federal judge's order blocking his detention remains in place. The Justice Department brought human smuggling charges against him for driving in a car with other undocumented immigrants. Kilmer Abrego Garcia is seeking to dismiss his case on the grounds the Trump administration is targeting him. A federal judge has temporarily blocked the Trump administration from ending deportation protections for 230 immigrants from South Sudan. The decision by Judge Angel Kelly came about a week before their TPS, temporary protected status, was set to expire, citing in the ruling, quote, serious long-term consequences, including the risk of deadly harm if the immigrants are deported to South Sudan. The United Nations has warned of escalating armed conflict in South Sudan and widespread food insecurity in the region. The Trump administration announced it's freezing all child care funds to Minnesota. The Deputy Secretary of Health and Human Services, Jim O'Neill, said the move was in response to the work of right-wing anti-Muslim influencer Nick Shirley, who published a video claiming he found that daycare centers operated by Somali residents in Minneapolis had committed fraud. Shirley's video provided scant evidence of his claims, but was retweeted by Vice President J.D. Vance and Elon Musk. And at midnight New York time, Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani will be sworn in as mayor of New York City by New York Attorney General Letitia James in a private ceremony at an abandoned subway station under City Hall. Then on New Year's Day, Vermont's independent Senator Bernie Sanders will publicly administer the oath of office to Mamdani on the steps of City Hall. Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will introduce Mamdani in the midst of an inauguration block party, which is expected to have some 40,000 revelers. Democracy Now! Will be streaming the inauguration ceremony at democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
At least two oil tankers have reportedly arrived in Venezuela in recent days, with other vessels navigating toward the Venezuelan coast, despite the Trump administration's blockade. Two other tankers approaching Venezuela are not under sanction, are part of a fleet from China. Venezuela's state oil company has begun shutting some crude oil wells on account of the U.S. pressure on exports and storage space being filled. They've announced daily production will be reduced by 15%. Meanwhile, the U.S. carried out a drone strike on a remote dock facility last week in the first report of a land attack on Venezuela by the U.S. since the Trump administration's military pressure campaign began. Since September, the Pentagon's claimed 30 attacks on boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, killing at least 107 people. The Trump administration claims without evidence the boats were carrying fentanyl bound for the U.S. and calls for the people killed— calls that people killed narco-terrorists. From where we go, to Caracas, where we're joined by journalist Adriana Chavez. Her latest piece for DropSite News headlined War of the Entire People, Venezuela's Grassroots Rise to Resist Trump's Naval Blockade. Adriana, can you start off by talking about the response to this latest news? President Trump said it himself last week that we didn't say there was a CIA land attack on Venezuela. He said there was a U.S. attack. And now in the days, U.S. administration officials say it was a CIA strike. If you can talk about both that, the killing of people in these boats, and how the people of Venezuela are responding.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, so as you know, in the last 4 months, since August specifically, the United States has been amassing a large military buildup in the Caribbean under the pretext that they are fighting drug trafficking. And under that pretext, they have been bombing dozens of small boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific, and they have killed over 100 people. Now, there is absolutely no evidence so far that these people, these civilian boats, were actually drug trafficking. There is no evidence of that. And in fact, if you look at the data, international data, you will find out that Venezuela doesn't produce cocaine or fentanyl. So the narrative that the United States is pushing that these boats were coming from Venezuela and were carrying drugs and they were heading for the United States doesn't really rely on any verifiable evidence. Cocaine and fentanyl are not produced in Venezuela. Cocaine is mainly produced in countries like Colombia, Peru, Bolivia, and only less than 10% of that cocaine produced in those countries passes through Venezuela. Less than 10%. That means that more than 80% of the cocaine that is produced in Latin America reaches the United States via land, via Central American nations that are actually allies with the U.S. government, and via the Pacific. So the idea that these folks are carrying drugs that are coming from Venezuela and getting to the United States is not credible. And in the case of fentanyl, fentanyl is produced in North American countries, and it reaches the United States by land through the Mexican border. So basically, the United States is killing people in the Caribbean and the Pacific with absolutely no evidence. In fact, United Nations experts have already made it very clear that these are extrajudicial killings. And even if there was the suspicions that these boats were carrying drugs, the correct procedure will be to seize and to detain the people, to detain the boats. And the United States is not doing that. They're just killing them. And why? You have to ask yourself, why is the United States simply killing these people, bombing these civilian vessels instead of doing the correct procedure? But because they don't really care about the whole drug trafficking issue. They know that these vessels most likely are just civilians and fishermen. They care about pushing the narrative, justifying the presence of the U.S. military in the Caribbean. For what? So they can arrive to this exact moment right now, in which the United States, the President Donald Trump, has announced that Venezuela is now under a naval blockade, a complete, a total blockade against Venezuela, and is now seizing oil tankers in Caribbean waters. The first oil tanker was actually seized on December 10, and the tanker was later taken to Texas to unload the oil because Trump said that the United States would simply kick the oil that these tankers were carrying. The second tanker
Andreina, yes. I just wanted to ask you about this issue of Trump claiming that Venezuela in the past has taken oil that belongs to the United States. If you could comment about that. And also, you've written about the commune movement. Most people in the United States have no awareness of the vast commune movement that's developed in Venezuela in recent years. If you could talk about the communes, how they arose.
Indeed. So what I was saying about the oil tankers, I mean, the point that I wanted to reach is that the United States said that they're going to target sanctioned oil tankers, and that's actually not true. They are targeting any oil tanker that enters and leaves Venezuela. And this is with the purpose of creating economic asphyxiation. That is the purpose. I was actually listening to an interview of Elliot Abrams yesterday, and he was saying, you know, he was the special envoy for Venezuela during Trump's first administration. And he was admitting that the purpose of the naval blockade is to asphyxiate the Venezuelan economy so that people will pressure the Maduro government and eventually overthrow the Maduro government. So why is this happening? The whole military operation in the Caribbean, what's behind it? It is the United States wants to control the oil in Venezuela. It wants the oil. And President Trump said it. He said that he believes that Venezuela owes oil to the United States, that the United States was robbed at some point of all the oil that it belongs to them that is in Venezuelan soil. Why does Trump believe that? Because in early 2000s, the Venezuelan government led by Hugo Chavez nationalized Venezuela's oil industry. That meant that all these corporations that were working in Venezuela, they now had to transfer ownership to the state. So joint ventures will have a mixed ownership in which the state, Venezuelan state, would have a majority stake. And that was part of Venezuelan sovereign reindustrialization, sovereign renationalization of its resources, with the aim to be able to pour this money, this revenue of the oil exports into the Venezuelan people. A lot of corporations, especially ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, they didn't like the idea that the Venezuelan state was going now to have a majority stake in joint ventures. So they decided to leave Venezuela, and they abandoned their oil facilities in Venezuela. And they began claiming through international arbitration, they began trying to claim some sort of compensation for this nationalization process. And right now, what Trump is saying is that Venezuela oils owns oils, the Venezuela needs to give the United States all this oil that, according to him, was stolen simply because we nationalized our own resources. So that is what Trump is saying. And actually, very recently, he claimed that he was bombing a drug facility in Venezuela, in a port in Venezuela. And just to clarify, there's actually no verifiable evidence that this attack happened so far. We don't have any evidence. There is no witness that this attack happened. We don't know the location of the alleged attack. The Venezuelan authorities have not said anything, acknowledged that there has been a strike in Venezuelan land. So we don't know anything about that. And it's important to clarify that we don't have actual confirmation about it.
Now, Andreina, we only have a little bit of time left. Could you talk about the communes, how they have arose, yes, and their role in trying to prevent regime change by the United States?
Indeed. So the Venezuelan communes and Venezuelan popular organizations in general have responded to Trump's claims that he owns the Venezuelan oil with a very strong response, saying that they're going to defend sovereignty, they're going to defend Venezuela's self-determination. And they have also sent this message. I was speaking with Lana Bielma, who is a spokesperson for El Maizal Commune, and she reminded me of something that is very true. Venezuela is not the same country that was 10 or 5 years ago. Right now, Venezuela doesn't depend on essential imports to be able for people to be able to eat or to have medicine. We're now producing almost 100% of the food that we consume. And that is because Venezuela's popular organizations, during the worst times of the economic crisis in between 2017 and 2020, when Trump applied the first sanctions against Venezuela, during those times, we learned that we needed to diversify the economy. We learned that we needed to create a sovereign production, that we needed to create sovereign distribution systems in Venezuela. So we couldn't be led to starvation, which is what the Trump administration is trying to do right now. They're trying to starve the Venezuelan population by creating this naval blockade. So Venezuelan communes are pledging alliance to defending the country from this imperialist attack. For those who don't know, Venezuela has a communal movement. Communes in Venezuela began to form around 2009, and they were part of Venezuela's political transformation into a more socialist society. the whole point of communes is that people from the same communities or who share the same territory, they unite and they organize to manage their own resources, to manage their own communities. They, in the case of rural communes, they organize to produce food, to produce services, to process food, and to distribute that within their own communities and even communities beyond the commune. So this is the response that Venezuelan communes and popular organizations in general are given in the face of this new...
We want to thank you for being with us and encourage people to read your article at Dropsite News. Andreina Chavez speaking to us from Caracas, the article, War of the Entire People, Venezuela's Grassroots Rise to Resist Trump's Naval Blockade. Next up, Israel bans dozens of humanitarian groups from operating in Gaza beginning January 1st. Stay with us. Performed here in New York by the Palestinian Youth Choir. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Israel's banning dozens of international humanitarian organizations from operating in the Gaza Strip starting Thursday, January 1st. The group's ban includes some of the best-known humanitarian aid groups in the world, including Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, Oxfam, and the Norwegian Refugee Council, among many others. Israeli authorities say the groups did not meet new registration requirements that include sharing detailed information about Palestinian and international staff, funding, and operations. Israel continued to claim without evidence Hamas is infiltrating the distribution of aid. In a statement issued in anticipation of Israel's announcement, MSF said, quote, if Israeli authorities revoke MSF's access to Gaza in 2026, a large portion of people in Gaza will lose access to critical medical care, water, and life-saving support. MSF's activities serve nearly 500,000 people in Gaza through our vital support to the destroyed health system, unquote. For more, we're joined in Jerusalem by Shayna Lowe of the Norwegian Refugee Council. She's communications advisor. She's in daily touch with her colleagues in Gaza and has spent much of the last 15 years working on Palestine. Shayna, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you explain what's going to happen tomorrow and why it's happening?
Well, thank you, Amy. In terms of why it's happening, I think that's probably the easiest way to start, because we aren't really sure what the consequences will be starting tomorrow. In terms of why it's happening, this is part of Israel's continuous campaign that we've seen since October 7th to obstruct principled humanitarian actors from operating in the occupied Palestinian territory. This, we've faced obstruction after obstruction since March 2nd. Dozens of NGOs like the Norwegian Refugee Council have been essentially barred from bringing in any aid into Gaza. We haven't been able to get in a single pallet directly by NRC since in 10 months, basically. And so this is just one more step to push out principled humanitarian actors, particularly those that speak out on behalf of the people who were there to serve, call for accountability for rights violations and violations of international law. And we know what happens when international principled, experienced humanitarian agencies are sidelined. We saw that this year with the GHF, where hundreds of people, thousands of people were shot, injured, and killed seeking food for their families. This is what's going to happen as Israel continues to try and block and obstruct our response. We know that at least starting tomorrow, we will no longer be able to bring in international aid workers into Gaza. We have at any particular time around a dozen international staff supporting around 70 local staff and 200 daily workers in Gaza who are the backbone of our response. And so while we will miss, and of course it will be a loss to not be able to have aid workers there on the international aid workers there on the ground supporting our teams remain committed to serving people not just in Gaza, but throughout the occupied Palestinian territory with or without international presence.
And Shayna, what specifically are these new registration requirements of the Israeli government on for information on staffs, funding, and operations that you have deep concerns about?
Well, there were two issues with the Israeli registration process, and this is, I should note, a new process. Prior to this being implemented in March, organizations like NRC registered more than 15 years ago and were able to operate in perpetuity unless